On this week's episode of The Fame Report, Alexander Casella sits down with RuPaul's Drag Race star Peppermint.
It feels like much like that scene in Get Out, where they're like in the kitchen and the maid is like, run, run.
And famed queer journalist Michael Musto.
Liz Rosenberg, look, Madonna, Michael Musto's dressed like the Pope. But I wasn't only dressed like the Pope, I had a picture of Sinead O'Connor ripped in half.
Where they discuss all things camp and Met Gala.
It's queer as hell, it's gay as fuck, it's campy, fresh, hot topics, yes girl, you're in luck. Diva stars and queens, LGBTQ news, New York City, Broadway, pop culture, hurry up and get the Fame Report. This just in, is the Fame Report, it's perfect for you, so get the Fame Report, with Alex Casella.
There we go.
All right.
Here we go. On the second episode of the Fame Report, I have the fabulous Michael Musto. How are you today?
I'm great. I just came from the drama desk reception for the nominees, and I met Santino Fontana, who I've met before. He's the star of Tootsie. And he said no more drag shows for him after this one.
What are the drama desk?
It's like for Broadway and off-Broadway, but it's the fun event as opposed to the Tony nominee meet and greet where it's so regimented you don't get to talk to anybody and it's like a press conference. This is like you sit there and they bring them all at you. Heidi Schreck and Beth Lavelle, you know, all the big names in the Midwest.
Have you seen Tootsie?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. A lot of it doesn't make any sense, but, you know, I don't care. I like incongruity. It's very funnily adapted from the movie.
Is the music good?
The music is pretty good. It's by David Yazbek, who did Band's Visit. And Santino is terrific as Dorothy / Michael. And he has a great upper register in his voice.
What's the, like, filler they have in, like, what's, like, the filler in the show they have for him to get in drag backstage?
Well, I told him this. It's, like, one of the reasons they didn't do this show for so long is they couldn't figure out how to make him go from Michael to Dorothy and back again so much. But basically, once he's Dorothy in Act 1, he stays Dorothy for the rest of the act. He even sings a song alone as Michael, but he's still in most of his Dorothy gear. So it isn't a lot of back and forth. But he said there's a lot of people backstage, like 6 to 8 people every performance with flashlights screaming and doing his nails, his makeup, his hair. The chorus had fell off the other night and they had to put it back on. And
what else has he been in?
Oh my, he was the prince in Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
Oh, okay.
But he's done drama, he's done comedy, not just musicals. He's very, very talented.
Who else was at the thing? Oh, Beth Lavelle, who's in The Prom.
Beth Lavelle from The Prom. She's always a spark plug. She's really fun. Leslie Kritzer from Beetlejuice.
Did you like Beetlejuice?
Stephanie J. Block. I thought it was... They looked like they were having fun up there. Stephanie J. Block, who plays Cher.
That is the biggest cop-out. You being like, they had fun on stage. That means you did not like it.
I had a mixed feeling about it, but... Yeah, what do you do when you go backstage when a friend has not been great on stage? I always just go, you really did it.
My mother used to tell me, if like after a show when I did theater as a kid, if my mom did not like me in the show, she would tell me I wasn't good.
Well, that's what mothers are for.
And the few times it happened, I would be like upset at her. And I'd be like, I can't believe that you're doing this to me. This is like... traumatizing behavior for a mother to your child. And she would say, when I tell you you're good, now you're going to know that I'm being honest.
That's true. And it's good to have somebody grounded who tells you the truth. But we don't want to hear the truth when you come off stage. You want to hear that you were great. My mother was great at kind of putting you in your place. That's what parents are for. But yeah. Then I read about Barbra Streisand's mother, who was even worse. And Stephen Sondheim's mother like said to him, my biggest mistake was giving birth to you.
Oh.
But look at the success they achieved. And me, too.
But when my mom was, like, really hard on me, especially when it came to, like, she would sometimes ground me. My grounding for bad behavior would be she wouldn't come to see me in a show.
Well, good. She couldn't come backstage and read you.
So what did you think of the Met Gala? First of all, why weren't you invited?
I was once invited to the after party, and it was so horrible. Like, the after party is so not glamorous. It's, like, remains of, like, sequins on the floor and, like, an occasional mini cannoli. So I just would rather look at the pictures, and it's a gold mine. I have really gotten off on realizing how little celebrities and their stylists know about camp, Can you do a Google search? Kitsch is not necessarily camp. It might be, but not always. Surrealism is definitely not camp. What Jared Leto did was surrealism. What Tracy Ellis Ross did was surrealism. This was camp, people. Do Diana Ross. I mean, do Diana Ross. Do Divine. Do Billy Porter sort of came close, but I thought he was too serious. Why are you looking serious when you're doing camp? Camp is about fun.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these supermodels standing there in these incredible wacky outfits, like they're wearing a chandelier on their head, and they're deadpan, like, hi, I'm a dumb supermodel. You don't get it. It's partly the spirit.
What did you think of Lady Gaga?
I thought it was amazing because she made a three-act opera out of it. She made a whole production and she had reveal upon reveal. You know, when you see Katy Perry in the chandelier, it's like she looks like she went to Party City. She's always going to be third-rate Lady Gaga. And Lady Gaga, I think, paved the way for the crazy outfits. And Katy Perry was like, oh, I have to do that. And I like Katy Perry, but free yourself of the gimmickry because you can't compete on that level.
Well, I was kind of, I was more disappointed by the people that didn't try at all. I was more like, there were some people that I felt like tried and just looked weird or bad. That I was more impressed by than like people like Frank Ocean, who just came, you know, looking like a valet parking guy.
That was awful. It's like, right. Maybe he's not gay after all.
And it's also kind of like, and just, I don't know, I just felt that like, here's a great opportunity for him himself to be like showing off his queerness and like he's, I don't know, I just felt like, really? And it's like, oh, you think you're being anti-establishment by like fucking a theme, but it's like, no, you're invited, you're there for a reason. Why can't you participate? Especially when it's something as queer-centric as this.
And looking so glum. It's like, hello, why are you here? But I think the ones that got it include Lizzo, who is my favorite camp queen of the year. Cardi B, who I thought was genius, even if it looked like it was on sale at Bed Bath & Beyond. And Ryan Murphy. And it made sense that the gayest man in television today was doing the gayest man of the past on television, Liberace. He got it. He got the memo. He did the Google search.
He did the Google search, or he paid someone else to do it for him.
Yeah, it's pretty easy nowadays to like do a little research.
Yeah, no, and then supposedly he had this after party at Hudson Yards that was supposed to be like really good. I was not invited.
Me neither.
But Lady Bunny was there. I was kind of like pissed off. I was like texting Lady Bunny the next day, being like, motherfucker, next time bring me with you to your fucking party.
Well, the whole thing is such a gala that you feel like you were at the Met Gala even without going, don't you? Like, I've looked at so many pictures. You know what? The old me would have been like devastated to not be invited to one stupid thing. Now I've been around long enough to realize it doesn't matter.
Well, and sometimes they're so fucking boring. I know. And sometimes...
Yeah, you didn't miss anything. You were comfortable in your home and there will always be another one.
For sure. And I also did, but that's also so many of these things, kind of like the Glad Media Awards. You go to the Glad Media Awards and they look fabulous on the outside, but it's just a bunch of fucking people all being super boring, super straight up. There's like, where are people actually having fun? Where are people like actually engaging with each other? And that's what I want to bring to the table. Like, I want to fucking like, just like, don't take yourself so goddamn seriously, people.
That's my message to Madonna. But anyway, I'll never get a GLAAD award because I'm too gay and I'm too important. But
Do you think you won't get you there? You actually don't think you'll ever get a GLAAD
award.
They don't
think I'm important enough, but I think I'm too important. In any case, the night of the GLAAD Awards, I was being honored by the Imperial Court at this fabulous gala, and I felt that that was heartfelt, so I felt I'd rather be here. And then I had Night of a Thousand Stevies, which celebrates Stevie Nicks. That was the same night at Irving Plaza. That's done by the Jackie Factory every year. It's packed to the rafters with everyone dressed like Stevie Nicks. I mean, they really worship her.
Oh, you went?
I present every year. I come on and do a little speech about Stevie Nicks and why we love her. And I really do love her. I think she's a great vocalist. I love her style. I love her wacky Wiccan energy.
But you don't think the GLAAD would ever honor you for your work in media and journalism because you used to out people. That's what you kind of think?
No, I think in the old days, I was too... Yeah, maybe I was too subversive for them. Not the kind of gay they love. They gave a special award to the late Liz Smith at the time, who closeted celebrities, closeted herself, said the gay pride parade was too outrageous, criticized someone who went on the Tony Awards and thanked his male lover. They gave her a GLAAD award because she plugged some AIDS charities. I know that was a long time ago, but I have Italian Alzheimer's. I forget everything except a grudge.
But no, but also like, couldn't GLAAD also look at what you did in the context of what was also happening at the time and still kind of say,
well,
like,
they didn't.
Maybe they
won't. And I also had reached out to them for help on something. They ignored me, and then I'm like, you know, I'm glad that they do a lot of good work. Gay Anti-Violence Project, I once needed their help and they just gave me some horrible brush off. So all I can say is whatever good these organizations do, I'm happy. And I'm happy for Stonewall 50, which is coming. And I'm happy that there's an activist march in the morning called Reclaim Pride. It starts at 10 a.m. outside Stonewall. And this is a return to the grassroots community kind of march, like the original Pride March, which happened after Stonewall.
I know Daniel Noriccio was writing some amazing things about this on Facebook.
Yeah, plagiarizing them from my page.
No, but I do think that, like, not to like make you have a bigger ego than you already have, though, you have contributed greatly to the queer community because you've been giving coverage to drag queens, nightlife, club promoters, bars, clubs. Yeah, dinosaur age.
But you know, exactly. My social security number is 3. I was a waiter at the Last Supper. My birth certificate is in hieroglyphics.
You're a patient zero.
How much time do you have? Thank you. But I do think being one of the first, I certainly wasn't the first. A lot of people came before me. But being early stages of the community doesn't get you the glory.
Who came before you?
You're paving.
Literally.
Oh, there was a whole community. In the 50s, there was Harry Hay and there was activism. And then we had Stonewall. And there was Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera and all these amazing people. Way better than me.
But was anybody right? Was like anybody, when did you start your column in the Village Voice?
84.
Okay, so who was writing about these things in mainstream media before you?
Very few. There was some LGBTQ media at that point. There was not Out Magazine and Advocate yet. Obviously, there wasn't internet and all these sites yet. There were a few, you know, publications here and there. I'm wrong, though. There was Advocate. There wasn't Out Magazine yet.
Yeah, Advocate started because of those at the Black Cat in Los Angeles in Silver Lake. A bunch of guys were kissing on New Year's Eve and the police came and raided. And yeah. That was actually, I think, pre-Stonewall. And then that ended up, that whole mess, debacle, ended up birthing The Advocate.
And The Advocate was important in New York, for example, to tell the community where they could meet safely, what to do, what to say, etc. Now it's a big sellout magazine, I guess. But I'm paid up. In any case, at the Village Voice, it was a safe place for queer writers. They didn't care. If you weren't queer, you're kind of an outcast there. And my predecessor was named Arthur Bell. He had passed on when I took over. And he was a legendary gay gossip columnist who also blurred the lines and wrote about politics and activism.
So I met Madonna on Saturday.
Oh my God, was she in a harness?
No, but I was.
Just guessing. Oh, but you were. Okay.
I think she liked my harness.
What did she say?
Not much.
Yeah. Security.
It was really, really intense. I mean, she didn't do the red carpet. She got to the GLAAD Media Awards maybe around 8:39, like right before she was, like 10, 15 minutes before she was about to be presented. They didn't have one person present to her. They had three. They had Mickey Blanco.
The three Chers for the Cher show.
No, it was Willem, Courtney, and Alaska. No, it was
Destiny's Child.
Mickey Blanco, they've hinted at some collaboration that they're doing on the next album. Who else? Anderson Cooper, who she presented to a few years ago, and then Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, that's great.
So
the old League of Our Own team.
Yeah. So I mean, most people have one person give them the award. This bitch had three people.
Thank you. Not Sandra Bernhard.
No, not Sandra Bernhard. Not Liz Rosenberg.
Not Guy Ritchie.
But then she ended up getting up on stage. And did you watch her speech?
Oh, God, no.
She gave like a really, really sincere speech about, you know, her experience advocating for the LGBTQ community, going back to the 80s, talking about AIDS, talking about the dance teacher that discovered her. It was really, really
good.
That's
cool. I think
it was cool.
I love the stuff she's done for us from the beginning. I've always praised her for that. I don't think she should take the sort of self-pitying tone she's taking too often nowadays. What I've been through as a woman, what I'm going through as a 6-year-old. I get it, and it's true, but don't paint yourself always in that light. I don't think she had it that hard when she started. She slept around. DJs were helping her. Everybody was helping her. She made it big pretty quickly.
Did you have you interviewed her?
No, we have a long history. I had a band where we shared a bill right before she became famous, and she wasn't too nice. And I was like, this bitch is going nowhere. And I still say I was right.
So you've never interviewed her?
We've been like 2 inches away from each other, and at the sex book party before you were even born, Liz Rosenberg, look, Madonna and Michael Musto is dressed like the Pope. But I wasn't only dressed like the Pope. I had a picture of Sinead O'Connor ripped in half. I was the Pope with the Rolling Stone cover of Sinead O'Connor ripped in half, because before you were born, Sinead O'Connor was a singer.
I know who she was.
Who ripped up a picture of the Pope on Saturday Night Live.
She's still around.
It was a very esoteric costume, and Madonna looked at me appreciatively.
But did you...
And I was involved. I was like a big cheerleader, and I was on MTV when they had the Bedtime Story. I was there live at Webster Hall when she did her big Bedtime Story event, and they interviewed me. And I was a bit... If you look at Encyclopedia Madonica by Matthew Rentman, I'm a big player. And then I go through these phases where I'm like, oh, you know, either stop whining or... I don't know. I understand that she's changing the rules for people of a certain age. That's fantastic. I still dress crazy. I still want to be the oldest club kid in the world. But you have to also understand that your body's changing. You can't really dance as hard as you used to.
Well, I think that, I mean, so I definitely think that there is like an ageism that she experiences, because there are people that are telling her, I feel like you can't do this and you can't do that. And that makes her want to prove them more wrong. So right. Then she pushes against that type of stereotype or that narrative more with her art and everything.
And she says, well, nobody says Mick Jagger is looking ridiculous, but he's not trying to do a new version of Satisfaction. He's doing the oldies. You know what I mean? She's still doing what she originally did. I would say now might be, not because of the age, just because it's time to evolve. Take your own advice. Her own advice was always reinvent. Reinvent as something else. A storyteller or, I don't know, a chanteuse.
So then we ended up like, we were told that we're going to do press with her, and she was doing the Today Show for a few minutes, and then she was going to give like each journalist like 1 minute or like 30 seconds each. And then I was not even the one interviewing her from NBC. I was just next to a person. I was with a person who was going to interview her. And we were kind of thinking, oh, I'll get candid shots of you talking to her, like in... while you're interviewing her. Then they come to us, and like the four outlets that were going to talk to her, they're like, you all have to do it together, because there's like not enough time. So then all five of us have to go in. We go into the room, and on the way out, this one girl's like leaving, and I'm like, did you get any photos of her? And she's like, no. She's like, they're going to make you delete any photos you take. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we walk in, and now there's like five of us standing there. They let us all introduce ourselves, which was cool. And I will say, like, in this moment, she was really sweet, and she was really kind of, like, sincere and almost, like, intimidated that there were five of us, like, looking at her, like, gonna talk to her. Like, she really, that's how, like, she seemed. And then we all introduced ourselves. I introduced herself to me, and she gave me, like, a look like she liked my harness, and that was cool. But then they were like, all right, you're all gonna have to ask, like, two questions, like, all five of us. And the person that I was with from NBC asked, like, what are you standing up to today? And she said, I'm standing up to ageism. I'm standing up for basically everything that you just said.
And what was your question?
I wasn't able to ask anything.
So you didn't say a word to her?
I just said, hi, I'm Alexander Casale. I shook her hand. That okay. was literally
so
it.
So can you die now? I hope.
And then her publicist was standing there, and I was like, can we just get like a group photo? And her publicist was like, no.
Girl, Cher gave you an hour on the phone.
45 minutes.
Okay, so it seemed like an hour.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's exciting. And you know what?
It was exciting. And like, who knows? Like, I could maybe get another opportunity to interview her or something. It was just really insane to me, the energy around her. The energy around her by her team was really intense, really high strung. And then she honestly seemed kind of chill and cool. Maybe they're only like that because there's repercussions if they don't act that way or make sure. But there was so much security. It was like really, 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 really intense. And I was just like, wow.
She has stirred up a lot of excitement about her new phase of her career. I'll give her that. And for all my petty criticisms through the years, she's the one who changed the world. She redefined the rules. And I give her so many props for that.
Yeah. And I mean, she really did like advocate for the LGBTQ community. I mean, she... the things that she did for HIV and AIDS, right? I mean, she was speaking out about it when nobody else was.
And, you know, moving into the present, Lady Gaga, people say, oh, she's using gays. Give me a fucking break. Using gays? Her concerts are like gay revival meetings where she encourages young queers to come out and she fills them with love and positivity. Feel free to use us if that's manipulation.
That's great.
I had that as a kid. There was no mention of anything gay.
What?
When I was growing up, there was no icon to tell you it's okay to be gay. They would have been shot on sight.
Who's your icon? Who's your gay diva?
Diana Ross.
Really?
Yeah. Diana Ross.
Why?
Oh, she just glitters. I mean, I don't even think she has blood. She has like sequins in her veins. She is the epitome of showbiz. She's such a great star.
All right, here we go. And we have our special guest of the day, Pepperidge!
Oh my gosh, hey.
How are you?
I am great.
Wait, what was I, the not special?
I know, that ran through my head. I was like, oh. What intro did Michael get?
I was the opener.
Co-host. Co-host. What are you drinking today? Oh, Diet Coke? Are you a Diet Coke?
I'm a Diet Coke fiend.
Were you into those new flavors? They did like the Diet Coke with the orange, the Diet Coke with the...
Yes and no. I was, when I saw the cans, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm attracted. What is it? And I saw the colors. I was like, woo! I tried one that was apparently limited edition, mango. I couldn't believe it. I thought I was being poisoned. It was horrible. It had no flavor. I was like, something, is the this blueberry, bad?
Blueberry aside is also horrible.
And the blueberry's bad. The lime is, the ginger lime is good.
Do you know how much they
good.
Were selling it for at Jack's?
The blueberry?
99? No, all of them at Jack's 99, a penny.
Oh my gosh.
If
when?
You buy something,
I love
I gotta
Jack's.
Go. Was that recently? I gotta go down there.
I love Jack's.
Well, you have to buy something for a dollar to get the penny.
The penny Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
Well, the blueberry acai is not good, but the mango is good. And the lime, ginger lime is good. And there's another one. I can't remember what color it is.
Is it orange? Or...
It's not orange.
And they all have lots of caffeine.
They have so much caffeine. Yeah, it's so interesting, but I'm down.
So I saw that you were tweeting about the Met Gala that you were invited.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But let's talk about who was invited. No.
I'll say the first thing that ran through my head, I was titillated and... underwhelmed. Look, it's the Met Gala. They spend all this time and energy getting themselves on that red carpet. They know that it's high stakes and crucial, so we have the right to criticize.
For sure. Of course we do. I mean, it's amazing that those people... It's amazing that the people that were there are there. Kudos to you.
Yeah.
Props to you. Like,
and I was so impressed that... I was really happy that there was some historic moment. Aquaria, the first RuPaul's drag queen, and maybe ever drag queen, I don't know.
I heard Lee Bowery was
the
first.
Was Lee a Met like Gala Ball? When? How long have they been doing them? Not that long.
Oh, many, many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since
Cher was
early
going,
90s?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't know. Okay.
Cher was going to them back in the day. They've been doing this for like a long time.
I mean, my concern, which I already said, is most of them were fabulous, but didn't get what camp is. They were doing maybe kitsch or surrealism, but that's not camp.
It's not camp. And there's different levels. And, you know, like somebody just being over the top thinking that it's camp doesn't really hit the mark for me. But, you know, and some of the campiest moments were not my favorite, but they were definitely camp. And so
we didn't talk about this actually, and I think this is a good moment to bring it up. What do we think about RuPaul not coming in drag?
I have mixed feelings about it. You know, I mean, look, the kid in me that fell in love with Ru the first time I ever saw Ru wanted so desperately for our team, the queens and the drag race family, to really represent drag in a campy way. But Ru's style of drag is not camp, really. And so...
It's glamour.
It's glamour. And so, you know, I would be shocked to see Ru in drag outside of RuPaul's Drag Race anywhere.
Well, supposedly, Zaldi, how do I say his name? Zaldi,
huh?
Said in an interview they were planning on doing drag. Zaldi had designed the gown, and then a few days before RuPaul changed. I was definitely like, I mean, I'm not gonna say like disappointed, but I mean, I was like, I was so excited. Like, oh my gosh, we don't.
Ru is going to light this. That's what I thought.
Right. And I think that people, like, we don't see Ru in drag other than, like, the runway. And so I was like, this is going to be this, like, amazing moment. And then to see that, I was just like, supposedly also he didn't do it because he was, like, DJing later that night. And so he, like, wasn't going to be able to have all the, like, pulleys and the tapes and the things in place and then get there, you know? But whatever, I mean...
Well, it was a really great suit.
When I said Billy Porter should have just come in a t-shirt, that would have been campier than trying so hard. I'm not now going to criticize RuPaul for basically coming in menswear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what could RuPaul have done in drag, really?
Yeah, that's the thing. If Ru had come in drag, the bar would have been set so unbelievably high because we may not have accepted Ru in normal Ru kind of regalia. It would have needed to have been the most campy thing Ru's ever done in order to impress us.
But doesn't drag start at camp? I mean, isn't just drag in itself camp?
I think the idea of it can be, but the execution certainly isn't. There's people who really strive to be more fashion than anything else. You know, like, I think Violet and Aquaria are both inherently fashion-minded first. And so their idea of camp maybe, and it's up in for interpretation also. So it's never going to be the same product.
I think drag is subversive by nature. It's not camp by nature. If you look at The Queen, which is a documentary about a 1960s gay beauty pageant, do you ever see that movie?
Hello.
Most of them are just beautiful. They look like Disney princesses, and they're trying to pass because it was so hard to be a gay male. It was so hard to be a gay male at that point, even worse than being a woman, believe it or not, that they were submerging themselves in this fantasy of passing as a beautiful woman. They weren't doing the clowny, crazy, campy drag that we see now.
I was definitely disappointed by Aquaria. I just felt that, like, Violet, at least, like, when I first saw Violet, I was like, man. But then when you looked at it, it was like a glove. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. I, like, loved that. And I was like, and her makeup was sick. But then Aquaria, like, to be supposedly, like, the first ever drag queen, like, on the red carpet at the Met Gala or whatever, that I was just like, I don't know. And she's put out so many amazing looks that I was, like, a little bit disappointed.
Well, you know, look, when I think of the Met Gala and camp, I do want to see something that I've never seen before, you know, but I have to think, like, if I had done it, I don't know what I could have done because, you know, everyone's not working with the same resources that, you know, I don't know, but I don't think that I would, if I was a RuPaul's Drag Race queen on that carpet, that I'd be working with the same resources that Kim Kardashian or, you know, any of the, you know, recording artists are working with. And so
I would love to see your peppermint look on the Met.
I would have done a hyped up version of that for that. That probably would have been what I would have gone towards.
I also feel if I were invited, I would have been like, oh wow, these people look amazing. And Khloe Kardashian was so nice, you know, but now I'm sitting back bitterly going, they could have tried harder. That's not camp.
Well, you know, but I think, I mean, like, I actually hate being that bitch that's, like, reading people on the red carpet or whatever. But I think this was just an opportunity because it just was felt so inherently queer that we were also talking before. Like, then for Frank Ocean to show up in just, like, a black, you know, slacks with the thing. It's like, oh, my God. Like, I'd rather see somebody try and miss. Like, there was, like Donatella's look was outrageous. And, like, that's so exciting for me to see her, like, not take herself so seriously where she tries to show up, like, super fashionable and she's instead showing up. I would rather see people do that as opposed to, like, just playing it safe.
I think that some folks didn't realize or didn't get or didn't desire to have a performative or theatrical aspect to their choices. And so I was entertained by Gaga's four outfits, Billy Porter's entrance, Katy Perry's craziness with that stupid lamp, you know. I thought it was so fun.
And then the burger.
You see
the burger?
What was the burger?
She was like,
it was our indoor thing. It was, she had flats and she was dressed like a burger, like with a great big
cheeseburger.
She's bad foam for you. Cheeseburger. She's bad for you. What did you think of I call her Hillbilly Barbie, Kacey Musgraves.
I loved it.
Oh, I thought she was cute. And I didn't think it was that camp though. She was in a blonde wig and a suit.
Well, she came in on the convertible.
I didn't see that.
She came in on a pink convertible.
It's still not
then the entrance is very theatrical, which could be confused with camp, but it was her in a pretty, I mean, if it had been her riding down Rodeo, then it wouldn't have been camp. It would have only felt outrageous because it's on a runway, I guess. I mean, did the car get on the runway?
No, no, no. It just, like, pulled its feet in. Oh,
darn it.
But Moschino, but you know, Moschino put out, like, a little doll. Like, Moschino made a little doll version of her. Of her? Yeah, with, like, the little blow dryer purse. And, like, there was a lot to it, I thought.
Did the car deliver the hamburger?
No, that came on Uber Eats.
Oh, it's Postmates. That would have been cute if it had been a Postmates delivery. Like,
today's podcast is brought to you by Postmates. So what have you been up to? Like, ever since Head Over Heels closed, what have you been, like, focused on, or, like, what have you been doing?
Well, after brooding so much about Head Over Heels closing, I took about a month off and, you know, ate some Postmates and some deliveries. And then I got back to work and, you know, I did everything at the same time. Then I realized that it's World Pride and everything is happening at once. So I'm working on new music, planning a one-woman show, which I haven't done since 2001, I think, cabaret show here in New York.
Where will you do that?
It looks like, well, it's pretty much confirmed, so I guess I can announce it, even though it feels weird. At Gramercy...
Hotel?
Gramercy Ballroom, I think it's called, like the actual performance space. I gotta look it up. It's Gramercy, at the Gramercy. Maybe that's at the Gramercy Hotel. And so that's, we're aiming real high, so who knows what's gonna happen. You aim high and then you get somewhere, I don't know, but
for sure.
Hopefully, I know that Caswell has signed on to perform with me.
The two of you haven't been performing for a moment.
Yeah, and we have never done a cabaret kind of live concert together here in New York, believe it or not. We've done performances, we have recorded recordings and videos together. And so I've been so busy here in New York, but never really done something like this.
Have you had more legit acting opportunities since Head Over Heels?
I certainly have, yeah. All of them are yet to be released. I'm working on some stuff next week. Shot some stuff last week.
For TV? Like what, guest appearances?
Some guest appearances. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, guest appearances have a way, hopefully, of turning into recurring. So hopefully that'll happen. Who knows? Fingers crossed. But there's an episodic series that will become, that is, it's already been out. And so this is a return season. So hopefully people will see that soon.
One of my most, just tangent, but one of my most fucked up nights ever was with Caswell. I ended up booking him for a gig in Philadelphia at Taboo, where was that place, that pageant you hosted.
Oh, I remember Taboo.
Yeah, I booked him for a gig at Taboo. So I was
when
like,
was this?
Oh my God, this was like before I stopped drinking. So probably like 2013, 2012.
Okay.
But then I booked him for this gig and I was like in charge of him. So I had to bring him to the hotel, bring him from the hotel and everything. And he did the show. It was so awesome. We then went to this like after party at Voyer, which is like the one place in Philadelphia that's open past 2 a.m. And he was there with me and everything. And I just like started drinking so much. I ended up taking him back to his hotel, like putting him to bed because it was like 2:30 and he was like done. And I went back to Voyer. And then the next thing I know, I wake up in the hallway of his hotel, like from when? After a blackout, like 6 a.m., all of my belongings are just all over the floor. I had like, think I had, I don't even think I was in his hallway. I was in like another random hallway of like the Philadelphia
Marriott. Did you actually
Marriott.
Make it back to Voyer?
I had gone back, yeah. Uh-huh. And then somehow from going back to, from Voyer, I tried going back to his hotel, but I was like in some random hallway, pass out drunk with all my shit. I wake up at like 6, 7 a.m. I'm like, oh my fucking God, no phone.
Somebody took it.
Probably.
Or
I just gave it. I then like cab it back to my house. And this is like another, I was so fucked up that I was like, I get back to my house. I'm like, no, I have to go back to the hotel and like find my phone. So I go back to the hotel. One of the most embarrassing worst nights of my life.
Was that the night you got in that car accident?
What? No, it wasn't the night that I got in a car accident. That was another night. But I honestly think this night was almost, that night was pretty bad too.
We're
and did Caswell find out about that?
I don't think so.
He probably had a flight to catch around the time you were waking up.
Probably, or something. Yeah, because I think he was like... No, I think he was just in New York. I mean, I think he was still in New York at the time.
Oh, yeah, he was living in New York, yeah.
But no. I don't think he knows any of this. I hope
not. Well, he does know.
Well, yeah, if he's listening. But yeah, so you're doing a show with him, which is, that's awesome.
I got one, when I interviewed Peppermint, one of the many times, I got this nasty comment, how dare you ask her about her transition? I'm like, she's winning awards for talking about her transition. This is not a big scene. And they're like,
somebody how dare you?
Yeah.
Who,
it was a comment.
Who said that?
It was a comment. And how dare you bring up survival sex? And I'm like, she brought it up. And how she didn't do it.
So what, you know, that's so strange.
But sometimes I think people with trans, people are making new rules.
They're more
all
sensitive.
The time.
Yeah.
I saw you were hanging out with Trace Lissette.
Yeah, we're best friends.
You were telling her some story or something. She was like,
oh, she was fucking, this bitch put it on the internet. But I don't remember what I was telling her about. She literally started recording it in the middle of me talking.
Yeah, you were performing the story for her. I know.
And so she got out her phone, and I didn't even know it was recording until. Like,
this queen is big at, like, you're picking your nose. And he's like, here.
Yeah.
We'll do an Insta story.
You're always picking your nose.
Insta story.
She is good for that. Yeah.
Are you watching season 11?
I'm watching season 11.
Who are you rooting for?
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, my default rooting for is anybody from New York. Like, I'm Team New York all the way.
Well, there aren't too many New York ones left.
There really aren't.
They're all gone.
Yeah. So that's that. I love, and I want to give a special shout out to Sugar Cane because I think she is fantastic and she's such a great performer. And, you know, they call her grandma on the show, and she's been in, she's been doing drag for a while, but she's just like newer to the New York scene than a lot of the other queens. So I just want to give her a special shout out. Hire her, book her. I'm sure she's really busy, but she's fantastic.
Who's your favorite drag queen that you've never met or never worked with before?
That I've never met or never worked with from Drag Race?
Or just
anywhere?
Drag Race, yeah.
I really would like to work with Hunger. Hungry?
Yeah, Hungry.
Hungry?
I think it's Hunger. Hunger Girl.
Now we gotta look
Hungry,
it up.
Hungry Girl. Yeah, look yeah. it up. From the one that looks like Bjork.
Yes.
She does Bjork's,
yes.
She literally does Bjork's makeup.
I just want to work with her. I want to be up close with her because she looks splendid.
But who are you rooting for? You still haven't said.
Who's left?
Brooklyn, Akiria, Evie, Nina West. Speaking of Cam.
Definitely rooting for Nina West.
Soaking up my ganache.
Definitely rooting for Nina West. I think Brooklyn is making a fantastic showing. I really love Evie. I'm kind of split for different reasons with different girls. But I'd have to say, just out of personal connection, is Nina. Like, you know, she's the one who I came into the season hoping would win.
You were season 9?
Season 9.
You were season 9. So there's been, what's the experience of, like, being on a season and then, like, working with new girls? Like, have there, like...
It feels like much like that scene in Get Out, where they're, like, in the kitchen and the maid is like, run, run! And so, like, first thing I want to do after you find out either a queen is going to be on the show, before the show airs, whatever, at some point, is to try to warn them about, at least what I do, is try to, like, inform them of all the things, give them as much information, arm them with as much information as possible.
So like, what's something to arm them with? Or, like, what's a factor?
Like, don't feel pressure. You know, like, don't read the comments, girl. You're going to get a lot of, don't read the comments. Stuff like that.
Which is something you're obviously doing too much of, Michael, if you're reading the
reading
comments.
Reading them comments. You know, the comments call your name. It's like that delicious piece of cake that is always in your fridge.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, when I moderate panels at DragCon,
mm-hmm.
they put them on YouTube, and people have said, like, the meanest things about me. Somebody was like, I want to cut his voice box out and burn it. Yeah.
What the hell?
Like,
I mean,
and that's a drag, and that's, like, a person that's following, like, Word of Wonder. So they're not, like, a homophobic person in, like, the middle of America. They're, like, a queer follower of Drag Race that's, like, spewing this, like, violent, threatening hate towards me. It's insane.
It's they've learned it. I mean, I can't say it's never been. Look, you know, the cattiness has always been a part of our culture in some way or another as a defense mechanism. But it is interesting to find out that the people are saying some of the most vile things are, like, these 10-year-olds, you know, who just got a phone.
Yeah. It's sad. But have you ever had, like, an experience with, like, a queen, you don't have to say any names, where they, like, really kind of are maybe, they enter the world and they're just, like, a little bit too much, or, like, there's, like, some drama? Like, have you ever had an experience where somebody's, like, come into, like, a tour or something and, like, that's been like extra or like
no look by
or the opposite or do you think they're really usually like super sweet and super like
you know who there are all kinds of personalities. Most of the personalities kind of align somewhat with what you see on Drag Race, so you kind of know what to expect. At least they know what to play up by the time they're on tour, and by the time they're on tour they're like, you know, chilled out. Certainly being in the workroom for an entrance would be very different. The energy, even my energy probably would have been different. The queen that surprised me the most in terms of how much she can go, you watch her and she's like a firecracker on stage and then it continues. And then when you're like asleep on the van going to the airport, she's still a firecracker and she never sleeps. It's Shangela. She is like electric. Which I think is fantastic. It's so entertaining. And so she's the one that's like the big surprise. She just never loses energy. And she never sleeps. I've seen her sleep once.
She seems to be always going.
She's always going.
Yeah. What's the biggest thing that surprised you about like your own... Like what have you learned the most through like your own success about yourself?
That people, I think, are more willing to accept... whatever I'm willing to accept about myself and put out there, you know, because I'm always being a queen and wanting to like create the illusion and then present the illusion. I've always wanted to like, you've been worried about my voice, you've been worried about like, oh, my body type isn't the right one or whatever. And then I realized that like, oh, they'll whatever. I'll sing a song. My voice is deep. I'm a woman with a deep voice. And there, some people will like it. You know, things like that.
Tell me a moment when you like a story or a moment, an aha moment, if you will, of like a moment when you were like, oh wow, like I'm successful or like I'm doing what I want to be doing. Like
when I was interviewed by Michael Mustow. Oh,
that is the correct answer. Yeah.
He likes to remind me that like anybody on the map he discovered first.
Well, yeah, we were connected obviously long before RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, I was writing about Dragon Trails really in a wasteland. There was not a TV show.
Oh, yeah, there was no TV show.
There were gay, you know, bar rags like HX.
Yeah, yeah.
They
were
valuable because they did promote Dragon
Trails. Yeah.
But I remember when you invited me to see you at Barracuda, and I had never seen Peppermint in an entire show, and I was just blown away by the talent, just the sheer talent. And it was everything. It was singing, it was lip sync, it was comedy, it was audience involvement. And then to see you get bigger and bigger, it's like, it's a joy. I'm feeling.
Aww.
Well, it is kind of true. You already kind of had experience, like, you were like a legend in the New York scene. Like, you were very established, but it was like a very kind of like New York moment. But, mm-hmm. And then you end up like entering this new space that then just like propels you to this new level. That's like, I don't know, that just seems like so.
It can be jarring, and there are jarring things about it. But to be honest with you, like, all the different elements that the girls you asked about, like the new girls that you can throw you as a queen on Drag Race, I think the media and like the lack of media training or not being prepared at first, the schedule, the traveling, the kind of being a jack of all trades, a lot of those things you can hone really well in New York. And so having the ability to do a show at Barracuda and do all these different types of styles of performance, singing live, then dancing, then doing a lip sync, then getting the audience involved and hosting your own show and sometimes doing your own mixes and all this stuff. I think the New York queens with no dressing room, a lot of times the drag scene isn't geared towards like having drag mothers and daughters the way that it had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of creates a certain type of drag performer. Where it may not, you may not be forced into that kind of thing in other parts of the country. And then also, you know, doing interviews with like Michael in like major, you know, he's worked in every publication and that's been an entry.
Each one a little bit lower than the previous.
They're all close.
No, they're all major. National attention.
Enough about me, but you're saying you're saying you got really invaluable experience during a live show, because anything yeah. can go wrong, you yeah. have to keep going.
Exactly. During the live show, and then also
you
in the
time. You can't lose that audience.
Yeah. But it's also the proving ground of New York City, because New York City kind of is a magnet for some people at the top of their game in fashion, in media, in music, in nightlife, and this and that.
And that's why so many New York girls win.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And this is going to be the first season in a lot, like, Aquaria's New York, Sasha's New York, Bob mm-hmm. is New York.
Mm-hmm.
And now this
Bianca's
season,
New York.
Bianca's yeah. New York.
Or was like, New York.
What's it like when you have filmed your season and then there's that weird period where you're waiting? It's not going to go
on. Oh my gosh, it's excruciating.
You don't know what's going to happen.
It's so weird.
It's the worst.
It's like a weird, like, funeral
like
or something.
Limbo.
Yeah, yeah, you are, because people are coming up to you and they're like, I know. I know you can't say anything, but I'm so proud of you. And all you can do
that
is be like, yeah.
I literally did that to you once.
And all you can be is like, thank you. You can't really say anything.
But at that point, you knew you were top three.
No. At that point, I knew I was top four.
Yeah,
top four. Okay. Same thing. Yeah, top four. And so that's all. And actually, you don't really know that. Because for our season in particular, I was top four. We did do that, but we also filmed me going home. So they filmed each of us not being in the top four.
Oh, a top four and then a top three.
A top four and then a top three with each different person.
Oh my
so
gosh.
So everyone
that's was a huge difference.
Eliminated in some iteration or another.
That's a huge difference though, to be like eliminated top four and then be in the top three. Like that there's a huge
yeah.
difference between that experience.
Exactly. And so I was like prepared that
wow.
When it's going to come on TV, I'll be eliminated, or Sasha will, or whoever.
And aren't people trying to figure, well, she hasn't been in town for a few weeks, or they're trying to
how long
you've been away.
How long, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And so, but I don't know how successful people are with that kind of the equation, because they also tell you, you have to, by the time you return, you're not supposed to work or do anything, which is, you're supposed to just keep it real quiet anyway. And be honest with you, I didn't want to get back to work. I mean, I needed to. I had no money.
Yeah, how do you live?
I had no money. I needed to get back
to
work.
How do you live? Because you also probably just shelled out a bunch of money for the show.
I borrowed a bunch of money, and my debtors were very gracious in allowing me that time.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Because that is interesting, though, because that is kind of the economic disparity between queens is real.
Oh my gosh! Well, I mean, look, there's the economic disparity of the queens, the perceived success of the queens. There's queens that people want to help out because they're like, yeah, and they, I mean, you're all having to go into the show and having to kind of, you're under the same pressure,
right?
To perform. Some queens make the decision to actually spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. I've heard before they go to the show, you might get eliminated, and then you have $40,000 worth of debt of costumes. You know, it's insane. And so...
You have a hamburger suit.
Exactly. Come on, Katie. A chandelier. Where are you going to wear it? Oh, the Met Ball. this'll work for camp. This whole thing.
But that's also what is the big difference between a regular season and All-Stars. You
that's
can tell
the difference.
The girls on All-Stars got a little more money because...
But have you noticed lately now, like especially in season 10 and 11, it almost looked, if you could mute the TV and just watch the outfits... It almost looks like an All-Stars because the girls are, not all of them, but many of the girls are really putting in that All-Stars dollar. You know, an outfit should not cost $3,000 or $4,000 on your first season of Drag Race. It didn't on most of ours. But now the later seasons, 10 and 11, I'm hearing price tags of $4,000 that they spent on an outfit.
It's insane.
We're in the wrong business. We should be designers.
Yeah, the designers are doing well, you know.
Dallas.
I mean, who knows, but...
What's her name? Dallas, right?
Yeah, Dallas is fantastic. I love her.
When do you feel most like yourself?
Did he ask you this question?
No, him and I just gossiped about Broadway.
Stupid question.
Okay. When do I feel most like myself? Really, honestly, when I'm just... It really is most of the time, to be honest.
Aren't you yourself all day?
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly most of the time.
I'm trying to become the motherfucking Oprah of the gay community.
Okay,
just
darling.
Give me my chance.
I'm giving you. I feel
Wait,
most...
what do you mean the Oprah of the gay community?
Oh,
oh, the rumors,
still,
the rumors.
You're still bringing people out of the closet, aren't you? We were talking about how, like, GLAAD won't
Well, we're running out of people because everyone's out, so now I have to out some straight people.
Oh, I think I feel most like myself when I'm sitting down, when I'm most content.
With your Diet Coke.
When I'm sitting down with my Diet Coke and bucket of popcorn, either in a movie or watching a movie at my house. It involves a movie, popcorn, Diet Coke, and some gummy bears. And
your
no
former surname.
Exactly.
You she know? Got so mad.
Cannibalism, right?
You got so I brought that up once and you got so mad at me.
I didn't get mad.
I was like being a little bit of annoyed. I was like, Peppermint Gummy Bear, and you were like, that's not my name anymore. But it used to be, and you were like, exactly.
I don't mind.
What's it called?
Peppermint Gummy Bear.
Peppermint Gummy Bear was my name, and my background dancers, who were Honey Davenport at one point. Who else background danced for me? Bunch of people background danced for me. Were the Sour Patch Kids.
There's
a really popular photographer now. His name's Kevin Thomas Garcia. He's works in the Broadway world. He's also a hairstylist. I think he was just working on Kinky Boots. And he was also a Sour Patch Kid. There's so many people that were Sour Patch Kids that are no longer Sour Patch Kids.
Would you do the dance? Did they do the dance move of the Sour Patch?
No. That's the Cabbage Patch. We didn't do. We may have done the Cabbage Patch. I don't remember, but we did all kinds of dance moves, and it was we even background how Caswell and I met is. He needed backup dancers, and my Sour Patch Kids danced for Caswell.
Oh, for what video?
It wasn't a video. It was a club performance at the Tunnel.
Oh. Are you going to have dancers in this next show?
Yeah.
Ah? Mm-hmm. And you were a door girl at the Tunnel, weren't you?
I started out as a door girl.
You look through playbills and I always see, you know, top credit is...
Sour Patch Kid. That's right, honey.
Or Sour Patch Replacement.
Yes, exactly. Fifth Alternate.
Company. Alternate. Understood.
All right, well, on that note, let's give it up for my fabulous co-host, Michael Musto.
I thought it was a guest star.
Guest star, and my fabulous featured guest star of the day, Peppermint
Yay.
Gummy Bear.
Ah, I'll kill you.